If you are looking for even more help and guidance on your breakup, I have a few different options for you to take your healing to the next level. I have 4 different online courses depending on what stage of the breakup that you're in, from beginning all the way into moving on after heartbreak. Or you can bundle all of my courses together and use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. I also have my 30-day no contact challenge to help hold you accountable in going no contact with your ex. And we have our free Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with other people going through breakups all over the world. To learn more about any of these resources, head to the show notes where you can learn more about my courses, take the quiz to figure out which course is best for you, or join the Facebook group. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST to get $25 off my course bundle. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast with your host, Breakup Bestie, aka me, Kendra. Breakups are hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Each week, I will be taking you through a different topic as it relates to breaking up, healing from heartbreak, growing in your single life, dating, and getting back into happier and healthier relationships. The goal of this show is to provide support, hope, tips, and to remind you that above all, this too shall pass. Welcome to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast. It is Valentine's Day week, which I know is a difficult week, especially if this is your first Valentine's Day you're navigating since your breakup. But I have a really great duo of guests today on the show. I have the first mother-daughter duo that we've ever had on the show. I have Susie Hopkins and Hallie Bateman. Susie Hopkins is a former newspaper reporter and magazine publisher. And Hallie, her daughter, is a writer and illustrator who's been featured in The New Yorker, The New York Times Magazine. And they're just came out with their book, What to Do When You Get Dumped, A Guide to Unbreaking Your Heart. And this follows Susie's journey after having a very, very unexpected end to a 30-year marriage relationship with 3 kids. And she decided to channel her journey into writing. And we talk about so many great things in this interview. We talk about how breakups are so messy. I think that's the main takeaway from this episode, is they're messy. They take time. It's okay that it takes time. It's okay that there's no perfect arc to your breakup. There are aftershocks. It's a roller coaster. And we talk about how important it is to validate that, how to deal with shame going through a breakup, why it's so important to protect your fragility as you're going through a breakup, which I think is really important. We talk about the role of writing out your story and finding levity and humor in it eventually. So I highly recommend everyone go out and get the book. It's a beautifully illustrated novel. So many great little relatable imagery. And like we talk about how it's like a great conversation starter, and it really does give permission to heal in the way you need to be healed. So What to Do When You Get Dumped, go out and order it. I'll link it in the show notes. And please enjoy Susie and Hallie. Welcome, Susie and Hallie, to the Heal Your Heartbreak podcast, the first mother-daughter duo that I have had on the show, which is very exciting. So thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. I would love, Susie, if you could start with sharing the impetus of this book. I know this was a very personal beginning of the journey for you. So I would love if you could just give a little bit of backstory of what led you to start writing this.
The backstory was Hallie and I had done a book called What to Do When I'm Gone, which came out in 2018. And prior to that, in late 2017, my husband very unexpectedly announced that he was going to pursue a relationship with an old girlfriend. And we had been married for 30 years and had 3 children. And it came as a kind of shock that the level of shock shocked me and continued to. It sent me into a real spiral. And it was so sudden, it was really cataclysmic to the structure of my life. I was closing my business, and in 2 days we were going on a retirement trip. He'd already retired, and I was going to join him in retirement. So everything became very confusing in a heartbeat. And plowing through that confusion and figuring out every aspect of what to do on a practical level, plus how to cope with the emotional load, which was very substantial. And so I basically, like, I looked at myself as a car crash victim, and I checked myself into counseling instantly. I said, give me every antidepressant that you can hand me and put me into counseling. And so I did that for a year. And then I moved and set up a new life in a kind of a home out in the country and did a lot of manual labor and tried to distract myself with real extensive physicality, basically. And then I had the idea, as we were promoting What to Do When I'm Gone, that I just said, sort of ironically, I should have written What to Do When You Get Dumped, because I just felt so savagely dumped. And I missed him terribly. So it was all going on at the same time. And 3 years in, I had done a lot of work to try to heal, but I wasn't where I thought I should be. I still felt very stuck and very heartbroken. So Hallie gave me a tarot reading as a gift. And the tarot reader said, without knowing I was a writer or that I'd been heartbroken, said, you should write a memoir as a pathway to healing. And so I had already thought about writing the book, and that kicked me into, well, this must be some sign that I'm supposed to be doing this. And it actually ended up being an exercise in healing to do the writing. So I did the first draft, and then after the draft was done, I saw it as something like our first book that addressed a lot of universal emotions and issues, very practical issues. So then Hallie and I proceeded to take that draft and begin to work on a book.
Such a crazy, after 30 years, and heartbreak is so universal. And that's when you were speaking, what I was thinking, like, from someone who's in their early 20s, which we have a lot of listeners like in their early 20s who are coming out of a year-long relationship, and then someone who's coming out of a 30-year marriage with three kids. While the circumstances are so different, the feelings are the same. It is very universal. And I love that you talk about that quite a bit in the book, of like, you're not alone in dealing with this, regardless of if you don't have someone who's in the exact same situation as you. There's just so many people going through it. And I'm curious, writing the first draft, when, from what it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you didn't really feel like you were through the healing. Was seeing the things that were coming out of you in your writing, was that surprising to know that was like all in there, even if you haven't fully realized it?
It wasn't surprising, because I knew I was a deep-seated mess. And there was a lot of content in that mess. And I think because I've been a lifelong journalist, and recording stories is what I've always done, but other people's stories, not mine. And what surprised me was, I go, well, the book is divided into three parts, essentially. You start at the end when you're dumped, and there's the muddle, which is the whole middle, which takes a long time to get through until you start to see that there's a new beginning, and the beginning is the third segment. And I was clearly in the muddle. And the way that the writing helped me was, I thought that, what is it that is actually working? And what is it that is not working? And what is it that people are saying that is just irritating me because it's so unhelpful? So I was examining all the social issues, plus the personal, plus the, why was it so hard to detach from this long relationship? Why was my entanglement still feeling like I wasn't moving forward in the way that I had hoped I would do, with the speed that I hoped? You know, I really had hoped that 2 years would go by and that was the magic pill. That was the amount of time, and then everything would be pretty good. So what I learned was, all these time frame issues and what you think should happen is not a helpful guidance in any respect. What other people say you should be doing is not helpful. It's within you to find what works for you. And I had to give myself permission to take a lot more time, and to say that there wasn't something wrong with me because of how long and how deeply it hurt. You want to kick yourself on top of somebody else kicking you out.
Yeah. So. That's so true. And one thing I think I've learned over the years of recording this podcast is how big of a role shame plays in a breakup. Even if you did nothing wrong, which you didn't do anything wrong, there's just this level of shame that comes with a breakup. And it comes from so many different angles. And it's interesting. I hear so often that at the year mark, people will get so down. And I think a lot of it has to do with expectations of what, in your case, what you thought was going to happen at 2 years. They feel like at 1 year, I should be done. And if I'm not, there's something wrong with me. And if there's not something wrong with me, maybe that person was meant to be with me and I just lost the person I'm supposed to end up with. And so there's just so many. I love how well this book addresses the messiness of a breakup. I love that you called it the muddle and not the middle. I thought that was, I just think that's so important to validate and give, you know, give yourself that permission.
Speaking of the other listeners who are in their early 20s and the different time frames, I've been thinking about my young heartbreaks as we've been, you know, hearing about people's stories and thinking about, you know, the book and just being so mired in this world. My biggest romantic heartbreak was from a 30-day relationship. Like, we were not even official and he ghosted me. And it was at that point, 30 days, that was longer than I'd been with anyone. And for my mom, it was 30 years. And I felt, I remember that it took me 2 years to even date again after that and feeling so embarrassed of that and of like, well, he didn't even call me his girlfriend. Like, why did I let that stop me and affect me so much? And weirdly, there's been something kind of validating about hearing my mom's story and hearing other people's stories and just kind of acknowledging like there's a universality to it that like I don't need to like measure my pain against anyone else's and that it's okay that it hurt me that much because for whatever reason, like that's what happened and that's what I was going through. And like I look back and like I wish I could have had this book at that time or been gentler on myself because I definitely was like, I shouldn't feel this upset or something. So it's kind of interesting how it has like brought that back in a way.
Oh, I'm sure. And I think that, again, I always tell people it really, there's no, people ask for time frames all the time. It's probably my most common question. How long is this going to take? I will never have the right answer. I will never have the right answer. There's just so many different intricacies that a person is tied up with and you just don't know what, you know, what it's gonna tap into. You know, it could tap into childhood and, you know, just so many, you know, there's just so many different things that can be tapped into with heartbreak. And one of the questions I had was, what was the dynamic, you know, maybe we'll start with you, Susie, of opening yourself up to your heartbreak to Hallie in this way, because I think I hear that a lot from people who are going through separations with children involved, as they do feel like they have to keep it very compartmentalized. So I would love to know, like, what was it like to really open yourself up in that way as you were navigating your heartbreak?
I have to say it was difficult, and the experience evolved over time. I mean, not many people write with their child a book. And that's a separate process that was had its own challenges. But I think one thing, talking about shame, that I grew up in a family where I had a father who was a pretty violent alcoholic and abused my mom. So I had this huge value of my children will have a safe environment and I will have an intact marriage that survives. And, you know, I think part of the trouble of getting over the divorce was it was such a value of mine to, I would never say stay in an unhappy marriage. And our marriage had many, many challenges. And it's not a bad thing that it ended, but it was for me such a sense of failure because I wanted my children not to have that ending. I wanted to set an example. And honestly, I felt like the biggest failure for not setting the example of the marriage that survives despite many challenges. So boy, that was a lot to overcome. And talking to Hallie about it. And of course, I'm very close with my two sons, and Hallie was incredibly helpful to me. We've always been close, but she came up in the early aftermath when I was really not in shock. And then we weathered it, and she and my sons, you know, worked on their relationship with their dad. And then when Hallie and I began the book, it was helpful to have another brain. You know, I wrote the first draft, it took about a year, and then having her look at it and say, well, what about this? What about this from a non-emotional perspective? I mean, she was, but she was not in the mire as I was about my marriage. And so it was helpful, although pretty painful, to do the length of time it takes to write as accurately as you can about what works and what doesn't work, and then to go over that in the kind of excruciating detail to turn it into a graphic novel was, for me, very painful. So Hallie, again, had to witness my pain at being immersed in the content, which, you know, you have to be in a headspace to write about something and to have it be as true as you can make it. And Hallie having to witness that was also, you know, I think challenging. Is challenging the word, Hallie?
Yeah. I mean, kind of to go back to your question, Kendra, like while I think that, Mom, I don't think you were like overly like divulgent or something, but I don't feel that you shielded us or were like, oh, I can't tell my kids how much pain I'm in. I think that in a way that is healthy, my mom shared her grief with us. I think that honestly, something I see in other families that I really appreciate about my family is there's not that thing where like, oh, I didn't tell you because I didn't want to upset you. Like, I'm so grateful that, you know, my mom cried in front of us many, many times. But what's the alternative? You bury that? Like, I think it's such an important example to see that it's okay to feel and express your pain. And I didn't feel like when I received my mom's first manuscript, that first draft, that I was like, oh my God, I didn't know. You know, it was just details. It was a story. It was turning it into a work of art. And to me, the whole, the divorce and the reshuffling of our family dynamic was really painful. But there was something really cathartic that I really desired of doing this up close analysis of what happened, like a almost postmortem, but not really, because it was more about the aftermath. It was more about grief. But to me, it was really therapeutic to get to sit down and talk with my mom. And there's a way that art making creates a safe space to process all these emotions. Like, of course, it can be really painful to dredge up. And there were moments where my mom would say, oh, I need to take a break. Like, this is too hard. But, you know, a lot of times there's something really healing about saying, it starts with this really, you know, painful thing. Like, okay, so in the first days after the breakup, like, you're crying on the floor. And like, so how can we represent that visually? And okay, if we're drawing her on the floor, like, what are the words that are paired with that? And what are each part of it saying? And suddenly you're talking about a page and an image, and you're making it tactile, and it's outside yourself. And the whole book was like that. And all of our discussions were taking this like messy interior pain and like putting an image to it, and usually finding a way to like laugh. Like, the book is very, it's funny. And so even though our conversation, sure, there was moments of, this is too hard, I'm crying, whatever. There was, I remember us working on it together as being very that dark, that laughter that's really needed. And I think that was a really big deal to share with each other, that cathartic laughter and then like problem solving that is, I don't know. Yeah, there's some kind of alchemy that happens. And to anyone out there listening who's in heartbreak, make some art about it. It might help. Get some collage supplies out. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's I'm really proponent of making art in moments like this where maybe you don't know what else to do.
That was going to be one of my questions, was about adding the humor to it. Another thing that was very obvious going through it was there was a level of I don't know. I mean, you guys just balanced it really beautifully of addressing the pain, the messiness, but also adding a little levity to it. And I'm curious, Susie, if seeing it morph from the draft of just the raw feelings and then seeing it as a finished product, was that cathartic in a way to be able to, because I'm such a big proponent of journaling, and I know you guys are too, based on book, of being able to see how the story evolves and being able to see it first of being just like in it, immersed, can't see my way out of it. And then seeing it from this bird's eye view later on and being able to see maybe the kind of silly, not silly, but more lighthearted moments through it.
Yeah, I think it's the power of journaling also, is that you can look back and say, that's where I was in that moment. I'm no longer there. That was one of the hardest things in my life. And I'm not there anymore. I mean, I have a new life, and to trace the steps that way. So yeah, it was valuable in that regard. Doing it was, well, it's enjoyable to work with Hallie because there is some alchemy there with us. This was very painful because you have to stay in the space of what happened, and even the healing, it's a lot of processing, and sometimes you just can't process another iota and you need to go walk in a field of flowers and not think about it at all. And so the push to get the book really done was probably harder on me because I wanted so badly to leave the space of doing it. But I think I couldn't have written it a year later. It wouldn't have been the same because I wasn't in the space where I was that in touch with it. I couldn't write it now. It was really at that time and paying careful attention to what worked and what didn't. And that was the biggest help to me when I go, oh, I actually did have a moment today where I wasn't thinking about him. I wasn't thinking about the sadness of it. I wasn't thinking about my old home. I was thinking about something completely unrelated, which means I have taken this many steps forward. So it's actually helpful to even to look at the finished book and to say, wow, that was a chapter, but it's not this, it's a different book now. My life is a different book now. And I just hope that somebody looking at it will find any amount of encouragement, because I needed to write it because I didn't find anything that addressed the steps that I might be taking and how important it is to do exercise, to meditate, to seek counseling when you can't do it yourself, to ask for medication if you're depressed. I mean, all those steps that they're just not outlined in anything I saw. There's a lot of what you do when someone dies and just sort of the emotional work that you do. But this was just a different animal to me, that I wanted something with steps, the 20 steps that get you out of the dark woods. So,
well, yeah. And it's just, I think about, Mom, the types of books that you might have consulted. And it's striking me that, you know, the first page, the first instruction that the reader sees is panic. And it tells you to panic. And I think a lot of books would be like, take a deep breath. And, I don't know, but there's something so real that you shared that, Mom, and then you turn the page and the next page says, keep panicking. Like, it's just, yeah.
It's a type of grief that I, after going through it, I did not appreciate how under discussed. I mean, I think now the podcast world has some great resources, and there are many more books. Heartbreak is kind of having a cultural moment, I think, and being acknowledged. Whereas in 2017, I just didn't find it. I found these sad little threads on the internet of some poor woman who, with her three kids, had just been left behind. And I go, well, I'm not in that bad shape. That's a sadder story. It wasn't there in that. Just one note on before I started to write, and kind of in the early phases of writing, I decided to interview. I thought initially I might do like a journalistic book where I did 100 interviews with people who'd been savagely dumped. It would have had some catchy title, and they'd be a bunch of sad stories, but ultimately uplifting because they made it through. And so I interviewed 6 people that I didn't know. And all I did was ask friends, do you know anybody who's been really savagely dumped? And they immediately had my contact. And these people, the shock to me was, and I was maybe 3 years in, and they said, several of them cried during the interviews, a couple hour interview asking them to recount what had happened in great detail so they could tell me the story and I would know what had happened. And it also was kind of cathartic for them. But each said between, I said, how long till you felt like you had recovered, built a new life and were moving forward with some joy in your life? And 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years. Those were the answers. It was not a year. It wasn't 2 years. It was, so I walked away from those going, oh my, I guess I'm not alone. I'm not a special grief case that's so mentally unbalanced that, you know, it hasn't been seen in the history books before.
She's really bad at that.
They were the people I just, and to each of them, I said, would you read a book about watching how somebody made it through? And they said, oh, I wish I'd had that when I was going through. So that, in a way, that encouragement was what led me to believe that what was needed was a note of encouragement for people.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I've been talking about on the podcast a little bit more, there's this surge of videos on social media, TikTok, of watch my comeback, or, you know, there's these like very tidy, tied in a bow kind of heartbreak recovery stories that I see. And they just really miss everything, like really everything.
Okay.
You know, they miss all the messiness, the muddle. And so what I love about the book, and I think what people will experience when they're reading it, is putting into words and images things like, oh, I didn't even realize there was like a term for what I was feeling. Like the one that popped out to me was the idea of the aftershocks and how those keep coming. And you're like, I know I got dumped. Like, why am I still shocked by this? Can you talk a little bit about that? That one, when I read it, I was like, oh, I need to make sure we talk about that, because I think that's very common.
The aftershocks were terrible. And I'm sure if you lose a person to death, you then suddenly, somebody sees, you know, a parallel is somebody sees you in the grocery store and says, well, how's Bob? And Bob died, but they don't know. But for me, it took the form of, my brother said, hey, I saw your ex today. And nobody had used the word ex, and we weren't divorced. We were like 2 months in. And I just thought, oh my, and it really shook me. And I was pretty easily shaken then. And then my sister said, so I looked up the woman on the internet, and she kind of looks like you. And this was the girlfriend. Like, this is in the category of things you don't need to hear that nobody ever needs to bring up to you. It's kind of funny because people are dying to talk about, you know, it's kind of a juicy tidbit. I sure could have done without it. And then there's just like when someone dies, there's these anniversaries, the day left, and you just remember those things. And each time it's like a little bit of if grief was your shin gets kicked and you feel some reverberating pain from it. And it would catch me off guard. And then the thing I noticed was I might be off balance for one of those for a week. Or 3 days or a week. And then later I'd notice, now I actually know how to do this, where I'd say, okay, that has shaken me, but I think I can regain my balance overnight. You know, if I get a good sleep, I drink a lot of water, I can regain my balance. So it's how this sense of fragility, I had a sense of fragility, and I lived in a fairly small town, and we were both pretty well known, and that made it more difficult because I couldn't go anywhere without somebody saying something, either sometimes supported and sometimes just dumb. One guy said, who I didn't even really know, I saw at a restaurant, and he put his hand on my arm, and all he said was, did you really not know?
Oh my God.
And that's nuts, because that's just like word of mouth. And then
what do you do with that? Oh, let me pause in the aisle and discuss with you the fact that it came as a surprise to me, which maybe you heard, but maybe you really would like more detail, even though I don't know you.
The things people say.
Yeah. And those for me were aftershocks, and they would really knock me out. And I can't say enough good about getting counseling when you really need it to help you find a new balance, which I did. But those aftershocks, and Hallie's idea of the roller, it's depicted as a roller coaster with these, when you hit the really serious down loops and where you're likeliest to vomit on the roller coaster, those are the really hard moments, including anniversaries and birthdays and things that are just gone. You know, everything's changed. So
over the past year, I've really made an effort to get my finances in a place where I'm not just budgeting, but I'm also looking into my financial future. And recently I've learned a few things that I think you would find so interesting. Did you know that 66% of men are investing in the stock market compared to just 48% of women? And here's another one that probably won't surprise you. Multiple studies have shown that women are better investors than men. Why? Because men are overconfident and women actually do the research. The good news is that Acorns makes it easy for everyone to start investing. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You also don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you have is spare change. I love that Acorns automates and takes the guesswork out of what is usually a very intimidating process. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/heartbreak or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risks. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/heartbreak. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes in addition to your breakup overwhelm? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. And these hormone disruptors are on top of the natural hormone changes we go through. And even though it is a natural process, it doesn't mean it doesn't wreak havoc on us. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore. Thanks to Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal changes in women of all ages. I love that Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms, menopause symptoms, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and occasional bloating and gas. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HEARTBREAK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEARTBREAK for 15% off today.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
And I like the idea, and I think you guys talk about that, is of embracing the fact that it's going to, embracing is kind of a strong word, but
maybe like acknowledging
yourself. Or, yeah. Even bracing yourself of knowing like, okay, I'm on Valentine's Day, speaking it's February 5th, but Valentine's Day is coming up. But okay, this is going to be difficult and that will be okay. And I love the idea of regaining your balance and how it will happen quicker as time goes on. But yeah. Knowing like it's okay to be, I hear that all the time. I ran into my ex or I heard this news about them and I'm really shaken by it. And it's like, of course you are, especially if it's the first time of going through it. Of course, you're going to be really shaken up by that. But every time it will get easier.
Yeah. And it's almost like I found that a little mental preparation going into particularly into public situations where people just could not help themselves. I seem to live in a place where people wanted to talk a lot about it.
Yeah.
Well, my mom started shopping at the grocery store at like 5 a.m. So not to run into people.
Yeah. I took measures, which to other people, they might sound like nuts, but it was preserving it was helping me to have periods of normalcy in which I knew I'd be fragile and if I met people. And plus, you know, people do say just dreadful things sometimes that you wish you hadn't emerged from your hole.
It does make you think of like celebrities when they go through heartbreak and like overwhelming that would be. I'm just trying to, you think about the pain that comes with it and then you have every media outlet wanting to know, anyone on the street wanting to know.
Terrible.
I really wish
we could just send our book to J-Lo. I mean, girl, you want it? Reach out. We'll send you a copy.
Yep, you guys should. Yes, we got to figure out how to get that to her. So a recurring thing that I think is in every part of the book is this idea of making the to-do list. And I wanted to know, what was the thought of, like, because I would assume it's like a progression thing of every time the to-do list is like getting a little bit more, there's more things on it or bigger things on it. Can you talk about that? As I was reading through it, I was like, I would love to know their thoughts on why that was a recurring theme.
That was just written into the draft because I'm a person who uses lists for as a functional matter. And also I had interviewed a man who became really famous, whose name is Ian, and he lived in France when I talked to him. But he's one of the guys that had been dumped, and he was also a big list maker and talked, and basically he put his life for sale on eBay. His entire life, when his wife met another guy, they were standing in line to buy their a dream home, and he was in love with her, and they were married, and she met this guy in line and left him for the guy. So his heart was broken, and he put his whole life for sale on eBay, his friends and his motorcycle and his everything he had. And so in talking to him, he was a really nice guy, but he said that he had tasks, lists, and he also had a what do you call it when you all the things you want to do?
Like a bucket list.
Yeah. So he had a bucket list, and he also used, and I said, well, what's the value of tasks to you? And he said, well, it's a distraction. So I assign myself a bunch of tasks, and then I complete those tasks, and that gets me through another day. And that really jived with what I thought too. And he ended up doing his whole bucket list within a year, I think, of her leaving. So that was the gist of it for to-do lists, and how he used those as a recurring theme through the.
So just for the listeners, I'll just give an example.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So in the very early part of the book, the first to-do list that you come across says, sob uncontrollably, pull blanket overhead and stay in bed for 14 hours straight, stare out window. And then a few to-do lists later, when you're a little further down the line of healing, the to-do list says, prepare a nice meal, wipe the counter, take out the garbage. So it's just tiny, tiny steps, and not taking on anything too big, but just meeting yourself where you are. And, you know, the ability to check something off, even if it's sob uncontrollably, it's like, well, you could do that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Just the days after it just happened.
Yeah. I've never thought about that as a form of distraction, but it is of like, okay, this is my next thing. And if I don't stop moving, then I can have, then the emotions won't hit me. I mean, and they always do come to hit, but
yeah,
at least getting through the day and giving, and then, you know, having your space later on to process the sadness. But I'm a huge fan of to-do lists. I think it's a great thing for people who are going through breakups. It's that small sense of accomplishment and like rebuilding the self-esteem. And another thing that I love throughout the book is the different rituals that you guys talk about. I think rituals are so important as you're navigating a breakup. And a couple of them that I remember is the, at the end of the day, noticing what was something interesting, what was something beautiful. So can you talk about the role of rituals and how that played into your journey?
Well, for me, it just became evident that I think that's in the muddle part of the book. And I came out of this basically intense depression and deep sadness into, okay, now I'm starting to live my life. I still am visited by these feelings, but now I have to take action to build this life. And what do I do next? And I'm a big gardener, and I'm a fan of frogs and butterflies. So I took a lot of pictures to focus my attention. Photography is good for that. I did a lot of things to see beautiful things and notice them, because that is a way of bringing your attention out of whatever hole you're in. There's a lot of beauty regardless of the state of your heartbreak, and it takes action. It doesn't come by inaction. So it was me figuring out what actions were necessary to basically build a life in which joy could come back.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think honoring the actions that you're capable of at the time. Because I think sometimes right after a breakup, we get this like, we see Eat, Pray, Love, and it's like, okay, I'm going to fly solo to Bali, you know, I'm going to do this big thing. And you're wiped out when you're going through this and you're exhausted. And so being able to honor, okay, what are some, and there's so many good ideas throughout the book of different things that you can do. But I think being able to honor where you're at and what you have the capacity for, but always taking some sort of action, I think that's such a key point.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's a, for me, I had to become much kinder to myself. And mm-hmm. and because I have always been a, you know, career driven, fairly fast moving producer, and I had to really stop and just go, okay, now it's time. I didn't take particularly good care of myself in my married years, and everybody else's needs seemed to come first. And I had to learn how to do that. And at the same time, I saw the value of, I need to be kinder to myself. I need to find compassion for myself as I'm going through this. And a slowing down can be a good way to notice what you actually need. And then you have to figure out how to provide that for yourself. And that's finding that compassion, I think, was a big part of my journey.
From my perspective, a lot of that compassion came out through the book, Mom, because I mean, certainly in the early days when you were in the knee deep in the grief, like, I just remember you were just like, God, I must be such an idiot. Like, why did I let this happen? Yeah. And there was so much of that turning on oneself. And what I noticed as, you know, as we worked on the book together and the book became, I mean, talking about noticing, the book was this act of you noticing your own path, your own progress. And I think the fact that, you know, the intention of the whole story and the whole, you know, telling of something so personal and so painful is with the hope that it might help someone else. I think that I saw so much more kindness toward yourself come out in those pages, which was really beautiful to witness and beautiful to absorb, because I think whether it's a breakup or anything, we're all going to encounter loss in life, and there will certainly be many opportunities to self-flagellate. And to see my mom turn from that toward more kindness, I think was really a turning point and a really inspiring thing for me to witness, because I saw this example of, like, yeah, that generosity towards self and patience with yourself that I think has helped me be like, okay, well, I think I can emulate this. I think that there's something very, like, underneath that self-flagellation to find that there was all this kindness and love was really, really fascinating and beautiful.
That's amazing. And I think that's acknowledging the mess, acknowledging the pain, I think is very kind of not mm-hmm. fighting against it and just saying, okay, so, this is where I'm at, and being able to, you know, look through this book and say, okay, I just think so much of a breakup is validating yourself and not trying to talk your way out of the pain. And just saying, I think to the moments where someone says, like, I see you, I see what you're doing, I see what you're going through. Right. Gosh, that's so powerful. Like, anytime someone says that to me of something I'm going through, it, like, makes me want to cry, because it's just, but, you know, it's like we can do that for ourselves a lot of the time. Like, hey, I see what you're going through. I see how hard this is. I see that you're still, you know, getting out of bed. Like, that's so powerful. And so being able to have some more tools in order to do that, I think, is another great byproduct of the book that you guys wrote.
And I think we hopefully that we strike a chord of acknowledging all the self-loathing and all those voices that are going to creep in, and then sort of pulling you away from the edge and giving some perspective. Like, I just turned to this page that's one of my favorites. It's called Behold the Badger. Should I read it or?
Yeah, just
read it. Okay. Yeah. I think this is a good example of what we're talking about. Behold the Badger. You are amazing, a strange creature by virtue of being human, but an amazing one, with your funny nose, oddly shaped ears, body that grows and shrinks and shifts with the seasons and years. You would not look at a badger and say, what an ugly badger. Just look at its bulging stomach and odd eyes. You would appreciate its uniqueness, the adorable stripes, the squatty yet confident stance. You would not pass judgment on a badger. Why are we so prone to do it to people? Let's take care of ourselves and the badgers too, with some basic respect. Don't make the mistake of thinking that because X dumped you, you are less than you should be, that you don't measure up. X may have left for reasons that had nothing to do with who you really are, how you look, the uniqueness of your character. Though it feels as if you were in the crosshairs, it's possible you were not even in X's field of vision.
Yes, I love that. I love that page too. Yeah, and even, you know, just being able to say, okay, here I go again. Like, I'm in this space of I'm beating myself up, and just at least having the, you know, maybe I'll let them go for a little bit, but at least having the tiniest bit of distance to say, okay, this is what's happening. Someone once told me that they call it the bitches in the attic, of like, that's what's going on. And I was like, I love that.
Because
at least
so
it like
good.
Personifies it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
So just being able to say like, okay, the bitches in the attic are going at it again. I'll let them go for 10 minutes. But after that, we're going to try to move on. So, okay. The last thing that I wanted to touch on is the very last part of the book of like your unbroken heart. So the thing that I love that you said is that it's very subtle, almost, of like, it's not this grand finish line of like, I'm over it. I did it. I love that you touch on that is this subtle moment. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's something a lot of people get wrong about breakups, is they do think it's this big finish line and that's the end of it. Instead, it is more of this looking back, subtlety, kind of having a moment of, whoa, this is different. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The ending, this actually happened. And, basically the book was me spending... The first draft of the book was me spending a year pondering where I was at the moment and what I was doing and how I felt. And then I began to feel less and less weighed down by grief, and my load started feeling lighter. And I was walking in my driveway in the morning, and it was 4 years and 3 months later. And I'll just tell you what it, I had this, I'm a big nature fan, and I lived way out in the country with lots of wildlife. And I had these 5 geese come over in a really unusual formation, where one was kind of off to the side, like the lone goose, and the others were flying together. And it was like me flying solo, and then there was the family that I was part of numerically in the geese order. And they came so close that it was surprising, because geese don't usually maintain a little higher altitude. And then right after that, and it made me think of being a part of a family of 5, which was now not there anymore. I wasn't part of. And then within a minute, these 3 geese come flying, and I have 3 kids, and they came so close to me. I could have thrown a rock easily and hit them. They were so close. And it was just this moment of awe, which left me feeling like I'd just been treated to some magical moment. And I had been thinking about, was I really over this in a way that really ready to start the new life? And I just decided that sometimes you have to say yes, because it's a fuzzy world and a fuzzy emotional makeup, where to me, trying to articulate that there's a conscious decision. I decided that I had to make a decision to be over it, in the sense that that was now in my past and a pivotal experience, but not the overarching guideline to my life anymore. And I really felt that that was the sign I needed. And in fact, that did mark the end of it. It doesn't mean that you're not revisiting. Sometimes your moments of sadness come, and you still have grief feelings because they hit at odd intervals. But I thought, well, sometimes I guess you have to say, I'm done with this. I'm really, really ready to build a new life, have everything else be the central part of that new life, not this thing that happened to me. And I think a lot of what I experienced was, and I think the book reflects this, was when something happens to you that's so out of your control, anything you can do to shape the moments that you have, to help you feel that you have some sense of agency over your own life, all those things were helpful to me. The to-do list, the distracting manual labor I did, I chopped a lot of wood. All those things are, yes, I am actually, you have to decide that you'll get back in control of your life. And while things may still happen out of your control, you're making the decisions now, and it is not going to happen again in the same way. So there's comfort in that to me, to know that.
And I love that because it goes against the idea, because I think a lot of people still believe that they're not officially over a separation until they're with someone new, which in my opinion, that's still putting the control in someone else's hands, you know? And I love the idea of being open to the idea of I can decide when I'm done, and I can be open to the idea of these signs that come. And I remember my last breakup, the moment where I realized, oh, I'm moving forward. You know, I was on a hike and I realized, like, I just have all this, you know, I had this moment of I have freedom. And that was like the thing I needed to move forward. But I love that idea of you are in control even after going through like this situation that was completely out of your control. So I really like that philosophy on it.
The book itself is a version of you couldn't control that this happened, but you are, we are telling the story in the book and taking control by being able to reflect on it and laugh about it and have it be a story that exists in the world. And at least for me, Mom, I feel like it's probably like this for you, but the book actually coming out and readers reflecting back to us and reaching out to us is really, yeah, just a mark that I think, I don't know, something existing as a story, like outside of the real life experience is really transformative.
Let's see, I don't even know how to say this, but putting a book out about you getting dumped, the worst thing that's happening, is like, it's, I want to say it's embarrassing, but obviously I believe it's important, or I wouldn't have put myself in what feels like a vulnerable position of being the poster child for getting dumped. And I think it's important because I go back to, I needed a note of encouragement that it was going to be okay. And you, there's a page in there about basically not killing yourself. And it's not a funny topic. It's a topic, but it's not addressed often. And some of the people I talked to said that they would have been happy not to wake up the next morning or many mornings later. And I think that it goes back to, it's an underestimated grief or an under talked about grief. And there's so much around it that goes against putting out a book about your heartbreak. There's so much shame and embarrassment that can come in at odd intervals, even talking about it. You know, it's just a funny project.
Well, it's kind of, it's kind of the, no wonder it's under talked about, because I think there's such a stigma and rejection feels so personal, and like the badger thing speaks to, I mean, the way that after getting dumped, you're just like, well, I must suck in all these ways. And I don't want to even share that with the world, that, you know, I'm unwanted or whatever. And that, I mean, my mom has really chafed against being called brave in all her humility. But I do think that, you know, should it be brave? No. Like, it should be so common
it
that we don't
not
call
be.
It that.
Right,
but Mom,
right.
It's the same as like women get called brave for just existing in a body. Like, there's all these things that, you know, it shouldn't be that. It should be normalized to just exist and roll with all of life's experiences. But I argue that it is brave because it's in the culture that we exist in and the reality that we exist in, where, you know, you put on a happy face and project all your success. Like, it's really bold and I think under talked about to say, I got dumped. Here's all the messy stuff about what happened and how I got through it. And it's not glossed over. And like, that's not a common story. It's made me reevaluate, like, oh yeah, I don't think I really even told anyone how much pain I was in my early breakup and things like that, because you just shrink into yourself and you think like, well, I suck. So
I got off track, but I referenced suicide because there's a high percentage of suicides that come from intimate partnership, right? From either conflict or dissolution of partnership. And the fact that, you know, that just adds to the argument that it should be talked about. And my journey through in writing the book and in the 3 years before I started writing, some of the most helpful conversations I had were people that had been dumped and then said, oh, I had one woman walk into my office and say, oh, honey, my third husband dumped me at the picnic table at work. And we were at the factory and he came out and said, I'm done with you, Gladys, or whatever. And so people would tell me stories, and because all those stories just aren't floating out there because we often hide them. But it was honestly the most helpful to me was hearing from other people who had gone through and could tell me, hey, this took me 10 years to get over. Now I'm remarried. I have a new life. I feel good again. But it took me 10 years. That's hugely helpful for you to have a realistic outlook. And I think my goal for the book would be that it's just a conversation starting point. It covers all the things I dealt with, but if people take it as freedom to discuss how it feels and what they do on a path for their own recovery, that would be hugely, like, that would be worth being the poster child for.
Well, ideally, it's permission to maybe.
Permission, yeah.
Yeah, to share, accept, understand either your situation or the situation of a loved one, like, oh, that's why she got really weird after the breakup for like 5 years. It's just like, yeah, like maybe just like some kind of opening for new understanding.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good way to
put it. I always say on this show that heartbreak does not get the credit it deserves. And I think that is very spot on. And it's so funny, when I started this podcast almost 5 years ago, I was like, how long can I really talk about breakup?
Wow.
Turns out there's a lot to talk about, you know, and there's a lot of stories that need to be told. And so, so grateful you guys wrote this and so happy to have you guys on. And I hope everyone goes out and gets the book, What to Do When You Get Dumped. And it's out now. And yeah, I highly recommend it. It's just so great to see the relatability, the imagery, the lightheartedness in parts, but also, you know, like the really serious stuff that we feel when we go through breakups. So really grateful to you, Susie and Hallie. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for creating a space for these conversations. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you loved it, I hope you'll leave a review and share with your friends. If you're not already following me on Instagram, head to @yourbreakupbestie, where I'm sharing new content almost every day. To join our Facebook group, Healing Hearts Club, where you can connect with thousands of people from all over the world going through breakups, head to the link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out my online courses for more in-depth help through your healing journey. I always end these episodes the same way, reminding you to be nice to yourself, stay connected with loved ones, and the biggest reminder is that this too shall pass. I promise.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.